Well, good afternoon, everybody. This is Glenn Coble, and my show, A Progressive Life, is on the air. And we will be talking today. I will be reading one of the speeches that I have pulled aside that I thought maybe you'd be interested in listening to. I was asked a while back, why do I read these speeches? Well, there's lots of reasons. The first reason is, I think it's good education to hear what famous orators, maybe not so famous ones, like Sojourner Truth, which I read about 3 or 4 weeks ago. She was probably not a famous orator. If you remember listening to the speech, it wouldn't be called heaven high oratory, but it said facts. It gave us facts. It also gave us a state of what was in her mind at the time. And I've done, I would guess, 7 speeches, and I really think it's good education. Some of the speeches that I give are not recorded, so I have to read them to you. Some of them are recorded, but we're not allowed to use them on the air because of copyrights or because of other rules. And some of them, I suppose I could steal off of YouTube, but rather than do that and make all the difficulty of getting it on the air that way, I read them to you. The one I'm going to read today is one of the more famous civil rights speeches, if not the most famous civil rights speech of all time. It was given by Martin Luther King Jr. When they had the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom back in 1963. I remember this. I was a junior in high school, and I remember it was a very hot day. Apparently, there were 200,000 demonstrators calling for civil rights, and they joined Dr. Martin Luther King. I'm going to read this. It's kind of long, but I'm going to read it to you, and then if we have any time at the end, we'll talk about it, all right? All right, this is the speech given by Martin Luther King. They call it I Have a Dream speech. I am happy to join you with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. 50 years ago, a great American, in whose symbolic shadow we stand today, signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared by in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to the end of the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro is still not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of vast oceans of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro is still languishing in the corners of American society and finds himself an exile in his own land. So we have come here today to dramatize a shameful condition. In a sense, we have come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall their heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. So we have come to cash this check, a check that will give us, upon demand, the riches of the freedom and the security of justice. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all God's children. It would be fatal for a nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summer of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until there is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. Those who hope that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content with the rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights. The whirlwind of the revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges. But there is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty or wrongful we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must forever conduct our struggle in the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protests to degenerate into physical violence. Again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force. The marvelous new militancy which has engulfed the Negro community must not lead us to the distrust of all white people. For many of our white brothers, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is tied up with our destiny. They have come to realize that their freedom is inextricably bound to our freedom. We cannot walk alone. As we walk, we must make the pledge that we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. There are those who are making the devotees of civil rights. When will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied as long as our bodies, heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the cities. We cannot be satisfied as long as the Negro's basic mobility is from a smaller ghetto to a larger one. We can never be satisfied as long as our children are stripped of their selfhood and robbed of their dignity by signs stating, "For whites only." We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote, and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote. No. No, we are not satisfied, and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I am not unmindful that some of you have come here out of the great trials and tribulations. Some of you have come fresh from narrow jail cells. Some of you have come from areas where your quest for freedom left you battered by the storms of persecution and staggered by the winds of police brutality. You have been the veterans of creative suffering. Continue to work with the faith that unearned suffering is redemptive. Go back to Mississippi. Go back to Alabama. Go back to South Carolina. Go back to Georgia. Go to Louisiana. Go back to the slums and the ghettos of our northern cities, knowing that somehow this situation can and will be changed. Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friends, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and give out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit and be together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racists and its governor having its lips dripped with the words of interposition and nullification, one day, right there, in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted. Every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out the mountain of despair, a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we are free, will be free one day. This will be the day when all God's children will be able to sing with a new meaning, "My country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride, from every mountainside let freedom ring." And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. So let freedom ring from the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire. Let freedom ring from the mighty mountains of New York. Let freedom ring from the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania. Let freedom ring from the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado. Let freedom ring from the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from the Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill in Mississippi. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And when this happens, when we allow freedom to ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up the day when all God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing the words of our old Negro spiritual. Free at last! Free at last! Thank God Almighty, we are free at last. Well, that's the speech from Martin Luther King Jr., given at the march in Washington back in 1963. I don't know if you remember it. You're probably not as old as I am. I do remember it. I remember thinking what a brave man I thought he was for giving that speech. He was in a group of 200,000 people that were, in most cases, very sympathetic to him. So I doubt that he was frightened at that point. But very soon after that, he was killed, shot dead for his belief in nonviolent protests. We are having protests throughout the United States, and one of the reasons why I decided to read this particular piece was because right now, especially after an African-American young man was shot 7 times in the back, it's just amazing to me how we can justify that in any way. And yet, for some reason or other, it continues. It continues day and night. And the refrain comes out, yes, but they're rioting in the streets. Well, there is very little rioting going on. And there was a lot of rioting after, not a lot of it, but there was some rioting after this young man was shot 7 times. But I dare say if your son was shot 7 times in the back, you might think about rioting yourself. I know I would. I have 2 sons and a daughter, and they are privileged white kids and have never had any problems like that, which is a shame because I have several friends, young men, who went to school with my children, African-American young men, who worried about things like getting pulled over illegally, getting stopped and frisked for no reason. I know that a lot of people think that might not go on, but it does go on. I was raised in South Bend, Indiana when I was young, and I went to the first high school I went to was about 30% African American. Now, I didn't hear so much back then. It was, and I guess like one of the young men who Facebooked me the other day and said, Mr. Coble, you're woke. Well, first of all, I didn't know what being woke was. And I'm not sure I am woke. I'm not sure it's possible for an old white man to be woke. We can try, but I'm not sure we know what being asleep is. Because we've been asleep most of our lives. We've had the privilege of being old white men. Well, we were young white men for lots of years. I do remember the protests that I was involved in about the Civil War. Yeah, it seems like it was that long ago. Vietnam War. And I guess that kind of woke me to the idea that there are a lot of people in this United States that don't care about other people in this United States. I think we have to care about each other. I had talks off the air with people here at the station how I struggle to listen to the Republican convention. I am so sick of listening to lies or listening to things that I think are lies, and maybe I'm wrong. There's very little proof that I'm wrong, but maybe I am wrong. And I'm sure there are things that if I were truly woke, I would listen to and say, maybe I'd look into that. I do try to look into a lot of these claims. By both the Republicans and the Democrats. I did find it significant that the Democratic convention was far more inclusive and far more joining and far more for lack of a better word, loving than what's going on currently in the Republican Party. The Republican convention tends to be very angry and hateful and pointing the fingers at everybody and saying, I didn't do this, what did they do? You know, that my folks would have had words with me if I had done that. As a matter of fact, I probably did do that. I probably went to my mom and at some time when I was being accused of being... Well, I remember one time. I was accused of smoking. And quite frankly, I was not smoking. What I had done is I had covered up for my brother, who was smoking, and hid his cigarettes, and I didn't hide them so well. My mother found them and knew that it was a place that I hid stuff. So, I stood up for him as long as I could, but when I knew that I was really going to get in trouble, I threw him under the bus. But my brother was always getting thrown under the bus because he was proud of the fact that his friends called him the, what did they call him, the gentle rebel or something along that line, because he rebelled against my folks. When you're a minister's kid, you tend to do that, you know. Everybody expects you to be wonderful, and you don't expect yourself to be wonderful. You expect yourself to enjoy life. And if enjoying life means you maybe break one of the rules, it might happen. Anyway, the good thing about having the rules is I learned the rules. Sometimes I wonder where the rules are. The rules are for everybody but me. If I'm subpoenaed, I go to jail if I don't answer to the subpoena. But if government officials don't go answer the subpoena, they seem to get away with it. I don't understand that. Do you understand that? You're more than welcome if you'd like to call in. The number is 740-383-9944. And like I say, you can tell me you think I'm stupid, or you can tell me you stay with me, or you can just talk about the situation that's happening to you. Right now, if you go to Facebook, and we have, I think, 69 days till the election. Might be 68. I'm not sure. I haven't looked today. And like 145 days till the inauguration, which is the more important of those two dates. Oh, we have a call. Let's go and see what this person has to say. You're on the air. What would you like to talk about?
What you've been talking about, the speech, I thought it was well written. We need to hear that every day of the week. You know that?
What's that? The speech from Martin Luther King?
Yes, I thought that was wonderful.
Yeah, and you know, some people have asked me, why do I do the speech? In this particular case, I don't know, you don't sound like you're old enough to have actually heard it live.
I'm 90 years old. I'm older than you are.
Oh, my. Well, then you were old enough to listen to it. It was hard for a white person's ears to hear because it was Martin Luther King was speaking to an African-American audience. And
yes, I remember that part, but I never, and I'm glad you had it today because
well,
I had
great.
To sit down and listen to you.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you did. I hope you learned a little bit of what he said. I know the first time I heard it, I didn't really listen as well as I should have.
Well, I'm glad Scott has you aboard.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Have yourself a wonderful day and stay safe, all right?
You too.
All
you
right.
Too.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. What a nice response. Sometimes I tend not to get all positive responses. A couple weeks ago on Scott and I were doing the On the Air show, and there were a lot of people that absolutely disagreed with me. But you know, that's the fact that we are in the United States of America and that we should have the right to disagree with each other. What we don't have the right to do is be mean to each other. I really don't believe we should be mean. And I'm guilty. I admit it. I am guilty when I get it. I see some of the Facebook posts that are sent my way, and I have a hard time. I'm trying. I don't do the greatest job. I've found that if I get rid of some of the people that are most vociferous in their hatred towards left-leaning people, I have a better day of it, and I'm able to respond to. But I do keep, like I told Scott during our show earlier today, I do keep a lot of people on my face list or friend list that disagree with me. I have a great friend, and she will remain nameless. I absolutely disagree with a lot of what she says. But I like to hear what she's saying because I know that she's saying, I know that she thinks she's being honest with people. And that's all we can ask for, is to be honest with each other. If you know it's a lie, though, you've got to stand up against the lies. You got to stand up against the meanness. You got to stand up against the lack of concern for your fellow man. People are making light that so much was talked about in the Democratic Convention about losing our democracy. But there are an awful lot of things that have been brought up by this current administration that certainly sound like they want to do away with our rights in favor of their rights only. We all have rights. Both sides have rights. Unfortunately, right now, if the power is on the side that doesn't want the other side to have rights, they can do away with our rights. We need to have a government that will listen to both sides. Now, I understand if I'm president of the United States and I think you come up and you say, I think we ought to be able to shout fire in the theater. And I don't think we should. And I'm in charge. I'm going to make that rule stick. Whereas if I have no power and the powers that be think that we should be able to yell fire and I have nothing I can do about it, they're going to make that rule stick. So might is right, I guess, is the term. But we need to learn how to listen to each other. Listen to the positive stuff that comes out of both sides. Right now, I'm really struggling after listening to two nights of the Republican convention to find anything positive that I can stand with. I don't think that all the things that the current Republican, well, basically it's, what, seven Trumps and six non-Trumps that are doing the speaking, and they all want to stick together, and I understand that. I would stick together with my family as well. I hope my family is a little bit more truthful and is a little less power hungry. And I understand. The first thing I've been told by people of the opposite side is when I say something like that, well, Hillary was power hungry. Well, Hillary's not in office. And you have yet to prove to me that she was power hungry. But anyway, I'm getting way off the point here. When I read this about Martin Luther King, this speech, it took me back in those days. Now, I was uncomfortable. I must admit to you, I was uncomfortable using the term Negro. But I read the speech exactly the way Martin Luther King did his speech. And he was helped. Somebody told me who he was helped to write that speech. My wife told me, and I can't remember who it was. But it was somebody that I respected as well. One of the people that I really like listening to right now is John Meacham. He's a historian, an American historian. He writes history about America, but he also writes history. He goes back and delves into the true meanings of what was being said in 1776. We weren't there. So there are lots of interpretations, much like the Bible. There are lots of interpretations about what the Bible really says. My father, as you all know, was a minister. And when we got into arguments about things, one of the things he always told me is there is no true justification for saying there is a hell that we will go to. That basically came from the Divine Comedy, which was written by, who was that written by? I've forgotten. Anyway, where there are all the different stages of hell and that sort of thing. And there really isn't a biblical reference to hell. Now, I'm sure that we have some of our pastors have been able to find a way to interpret some scripture to mean that, much like we've interpreted some of Leviticus scripture to saying that we should stone homosexuals into their final waiting ground. But they forget all the things in Leviticus that say you should stone a woman if another man looks at her. You know, there are just outrageous. For some reason or other, people back in the 200s or 300s, whenever most of these were written, they certainly didn't like women very much. They wanted to stone them for stuff. Or, you know, you wear clothes of two different fabrics and you were supposed to be stoned to death. Come on. That's really why. And I still do look at the Bible. I still read Scripture, even though I am an agnostic. I read Scripture because I really want to live a good life, and I think the Christian life is a good life. But I read it with just about only the eyes of a person reading the New Testament. And I'm aware enough to know that all of the Gospels were written well after Jesus had been dead for at least 80 years when they were written, and I think some of them as much as 200 years. So anyway, we have to temper all of our hate and try to listen to each other. Try to do, we all know what's right and wrong, don't we? Do we not know that it's wrong to bribe somebody? Do we not know that it's wrong to offer money to get some favoritism that's going to hurt somebody else? Do we not know that? Do we not know that it's wrong to call people names? I think we know what's right and wrong. But we tend to choose only the things that we want to be right and wrong, not the things that are universally seen as right and wrong. Lying's okay if the means justifies the end, right? Well, lying is not okay. And we all do it. I mean, let's face it. I used to lie to my mom and dad just to get out of eating green beans at lunch. I'm feeling sick. I used to lie to them to get out of going to school. No, I didn't mind going to school. I liked school. I didn't like learning, but I liked going to school and socializing. Anyway, see there, I'm telling the truth. I probably wouldn't have told anybody that 40 years ago. I think there are self-evident truths about what is good and what is wrong. And right now, we're struggling to find out, we're struggling to live what's good and what's not. We're not struggling to live what's not, we're struggling to live what is good. And if you don't know what is right and wrong, I have a minister here in town you ought to listen to. Anyway, I bet he'd love that if I gave his name up. he knows who he is. I hope that reading Martin Luther King's message shows you that he was not negative. He was positive about the movement to move forward. That's why name this program called A Progressive Life, is because we need to always move forward. I watched a TED talk yesterday about a gentleman where he was talking about apparently there have been living human beings on the earth for, 200,000 years, something like that. Now, we weren't always as smart as we are now, but there was some sort of living critter. He was talking about how we have moved from what was 7 billion years ago when the earth was formed, and how our entire history of the universe has been a very, very, very slow movement forward. But as we've gotten closer and closer to today, the movement has moved faster and faster and faster. And I know that that's part of the reason why so many people don't like it. They like the way things used to be. They like the way mom and dad used to have it. Well, most of the people that like the way it used to be like the fact that the ruling class were whites, Anglo-Saxon Americans, with no brown people and no red people and no black people and no yellow people telling them what's right and wrong. You don't have to agree with what they say, but you certainly should listen. We all need to listen to each other. If we would start listening to each other just a little bit, we'd be a lot smarter. I think if we'd start listening, and I'm talking about our government, if they'd start listening to people, a lot more of us would be alive today than we're alive 6 months ago. We need to listen. We need to believe in science, the truth of science. Now, science isn't always right. We know that. The science back hundreds of years ago said the earth was flat. That's what science said. The earth was flat, and we found out that it's not flat. There's always room for learning. There's always room for education. But we should go with the best science we have right now. And we know, like in the situation right now with the COVID-19, the best science says that you wear a mask and you stay away from other people as much as you can. And if you must be around people, stay at least 6 feet away from them. We know that's the best science. But we try to make our own science up. Well, now I understand we're coming out, the administration is coming out with a brand new wonder drug that's going to make us all healthy again. No one's going to die of COVID-19 anymore. They're going to have a shot. And it's kind of interesting that all this is going to happen before the election. That would tend to give you an idea that there might be some lying going on, or there might just be some exaggeration going on for the opportunity for the we poor, ignorant public to fall in line to. I really think skepticism is not a bad thing at this particular point. And if we stick with the scientific process, we will have a lot better idea whether any of this is working or not. Now, of course, you remember hydrochloroquine. That's going to cure everything. And it's not only does it not cure everything, but in some cases it may kill you. But that's okay, because it's not going to kill the person that's talking about it. Okay, now, enough of the administration bashing. I think you need to start listening to your brothers and sisters on either side of you. When I was running for office, I had put a sign up. I had like 8 of my signs taken down, and they were taken down out of groups of other signs. My particular sign was plucked out of 6 or 7 groups of signs and thrown away or something. I don't know where it went, which gave me the indication that the person I was running against, she may not have known it, but one of her supporters knew it. But we need to treat each other civilly. We need to find a way to, if I disagree with you and we're running against each other in a political thing, listen and shut up. Do right. And everybody, no, do you think it's right to throw somebody's political sign away? Probably not. You probably know that's wrong. Things that I will walk by signs of people that I think are not good for this United States or not good for Marion, and I'd like to kick them over, but I don't. It's their right to have those signs out front, and it's their right to believe that that is the best choice. I just wish that all people would think everything through, especially at a political time like this, where I agree that with some of my fellow progressives that democracy is in the balance. I agree that there are things that we are democratic things that we are going to lose if we don't continue on the progressive direction as opposed to what we're in right now, which is regressive or reactionary, whatever you want to call the current movement. I'm not quite sure what to call it. I will not call, I do not believe that our current president is a Nazi or a communist or anything like that, because I really don't think, first of all, I don't think he knows what he is. But second of all, I really don't think that's positive or helpful to anybody. You can say what you disagree, his policies you disagree with, but calling him names doesn't do any good. I know he calls other people's names. That's falling into the same trap that I hate to see from the other party on the other side of the aisle, where he does it so I can do it. Well, I think that's... I have children that I spanked for saying things like that. Now, I know I wasn't supposed to spank them. I did, though. Well, I hope you're having a pleasant day so far. I hope I didn't wreck it for you. And to the lady that called in, who's 90 years old, fantastic. I'm looking forward to my 100th birthday right now. I'm not anywhere near there, but it's only a quarter of a century away, right? Anyway, I don't know where I was going with that. Okay, I just hope that we all can learn to listen, and we can learn to use our heads, learn to think things through. Don't just because my buddy told me this, don't assume it's true. Listen. Now, I have a lot of people. I will on Facebook. I will pull up Snopes or another fact checker. Now, Snopes to me is the easiest one to use. That's why I use it. But every time I pull up a fact checker on some thing that is definitely a lie, and I point out that Snopes says this is incorrect, I get somebody from the other side that agrees with it saying, well, Snopes is a left-leaning conspiracy thing. You can't always blame the other person for doing what you're doing. You've got to understand that most of these fact checkers, and I've gone to other fact checkers. Matter of fact, the one time I was told that Snopes was a Democratic site, I did go and look through other sites, and the other sites were telling me the same thing Snopes was. So I'm not sure that it has anything to do with anything. But think through things. Be skeptical. Skepticism isn't a bad thing. Meanness is a bad thing. Calling somebody bad names is a bad thing. We don't need any of that, all right? All right. Well, I hope that I haven't disrupted you too much today. We are going to have a week from tomorrow, we're going to have a week from today on A Progressive Life, I'm going to have Mike Larson, who ran for the position that Jim Jordan now holds. And he lost it to Shannon Freshour. But anyway, he's going to come on. He's a very brilliant comedian and also a very brilliant politician. and just a very bright guy and knows a lot of stuff. He's going to give us a kind of a critique on the two different conventions, and I'm looking forward to that. I hope you turn us on, and thanks for listening to A Progressive Life. I'm Glenn Coble. You're listening to WWGH.
You're listening to WWGH Radio.